I'm a lawyer, as Becky mentioned. But this talk is about more about my previous education at Green Mountain College, the philosophy program. This talk is taken from my senior honors thesis, which was titled How We Can Care, the Ethics of Care, and Global Climate Change. I was a philosophy major in part because I was in my 30s and I said, oh, if I have to get my bachelor's degree in order to go to law school, I might as well study something I always wanted to study, and so I did that, and it was great. I also learned a lot, which I'm still processing, and still, I mean, I think I could do a whole lifetime of talks like this just on this one topic. So, I mean, it was a very enriching experience. And I'll gladly talk to you more about it if you ever want to. So, the first thing I want to clarify is that when people hear ethics of care, I think they often think I'm talking about medical care. And while I, you know, that's part of this, it's not the limits of it. The care ethics is an ethical theory. It's considered a feminist ethical theory, I think, mainly because it was developed in the 70s and 80s, mainly by women. I don't think it's necessarily a feminist ethical theory, but there's probably lots of books about that, and I'm not going to talk about that today. An ethical theory in general, though, is a system of thought that tries to help people answer the question, what ought I do? And my thesis sort of looked at that, even that, just that question, what ought I do in this situation? And I think part of why we have such a problem dealing with questions, ethical questions like climate change, what should I do in the face of things like that, is because of how we perceive ourselves as people, how we perceive ourselves in relation with others, and how we sort of think about ethical problems in the first place. That there's a guy named Dale Jamieson, and he did a lot of work defining a paradigm moral problem. And what I took away from that was that most people, when they think of moral and ethical problems that they have to solve for themselves, they're thinking of people who are in contact with them now, in this time and place. They'll be able to see the effects of what they do or don't do. And I think that that's at the root of Americans' problems in fighting issues like climate change. So I'm going to read a little bit from the introduction of my thesis, and I'm going to discuss two other ethical theories briefly, utilitarianism and, three, the social contract theory and Kant's deontology. That's going to be very brief. And then I'm going to encourage all of you as Unitarian Universalists to see yourself as care ethicists, because just in a very cursory look around the UU policy statements and website, I found some pretty good examples of how Unitarian Universalists already use the conception of the person that's the key to care ethics in your belief system. So, in a way, I almost don't need to be talking right now. So, here's a little bit from the introduction of the thesis. As we work to find solutions to the problem of global climate change, it becomes more and more clear that the lifestyle choices of people in the developed world are the main cause of the problem. As such, lifestyle choices that increase greenhouse gas emissions have entered the realm of ethics. Choices people make in their everyday lives carry much more weight now that we understand climate science better. Yet, many Americans defend their lifestyle choices as none of anyone's business, or make the claim that they do not believe their actions really make a difference. Hence, any attempt to alter behavior is seen as either futile or attack on individual rights. When people who will not change their behavior explain why they refuse to do so, their reasons tend to land in three categories. First, I don't believe in climate change, therefore there is no problem to address. Second, I'm only one out of millions of people who behave exactly the same or worse. My actions cannot make any difference, therefore I will do nothing different. Or third, my individual rights to privacy, freedom, etc., override any claim that I have a responsibility to lessen my carbon footprint. Therefore, I will not act unless it is in my own individual best interest to do so. In the paper, I address the latter two arguments because the I don't believe in climate change is not really a philosophical question. To the end of figuring out what to do, I propose that the answer to each of the two objections outlined above lies in the adoption of ethics of care as we seek to determine what is right behavior with regard to climate change. And specifically, I submit that the most useful nugget of the ethics of care offers American society as we know today lies in the theory's independent, relational conception of the person. This conception stands in contrast to the social contract theory conception of the independent, free, and equal person. If we adopt the interdependent relational conception of the person, we are become able to overcome these me and poor little me arguments against the legitimacy and efficacy of adopting public policies to combat climate change. But the problem is unsolvable if we insist on seeing people as legal entities upon whose individual rights and tastes and preferences we must not infringe no matter what. So I'm going to kind of pause there and, you know, say that and clarify that I'm not suggesting that I don't believe in individual rights. I'm an attorney. Coming to law school, I really do believe in individual rights. However, I agree with care ethicists who believe that an environment where people can thrive and be and sort of maintain each other in these caring relationships is a necessary condition for true respect of human rights. In other words, I don't think that I should have a clean environment because I have a right to a clean environment. I think I should have an environment because everybody should care about each other enough to do what they can to make the environment clean and good so that we all can have that. And that's a different way of thinking about how we are in the world. We don't operate in a vacuum. When we're thinking about what ought I do in a certain situation, it's not like you can, like Kant and Mill, try to. You can't just say to yourself, okay, I have to think about this abstractly, because if I don't, my emotions are gonna get in the way. Care ethics says, hey, you're a human being, you have emotions, you have feelings, you have an instinct, perhaps even, that drives you to do certain things, that calls on you to respond in certain ways to other people. And why would you ignore that when you're trying to figure out what you should do? And care ethics, I think, does a very good job of helping people see that they can use their emotions to figure out what the right thing to do is. You know, and it sort of gives you an idea of what the right thing to do actually is, because it says you should always act in a way that is going to give rise to a situation where caring relationships can happen, because we all depend on that. We were young once, infants, someone like picked us up and held us when we cried, somebody fed us when we couldn't feed ourselves. We all depended on those caring relationships to survive and thrive, as did everyone who came before us. So why wouldn't you act to make sure that that happens? And I think that when you start thinking about that in terms of climate change, it becomes really clear, you know, that we have an ethical duty to do something. Because if your homeland is going to get flooded because the sea level is rising and you're going to become a refugee, how good of a family caring situation can you really have? These big weather events. I don't need to really describe that too much. But that way of thinking is really in contrast with the way we're taught to think as Americans about ourselves, where liberty is paramount and I should be totally free to do what I want with my stuff. I think we have a lot of work to do as Americans in sort of altering our way of thinking of ourselves and others so that we can accept and respond to the idea that we need to do different things. So, because I know our time is limited, I don't want to get too deep into all of this, but you probably have heard of the utilitarian idea of ethics, which is you have to act in a way that's going to create the most happiness for the most number of people. You've probably heard of the categorical imperative, which is that you have to act in a way where if you could universalize your action, it would be okay. And I think that's best as expressed as an example. So there's one where you are harboring fugitives who will certainly die if you give them up. But you also know it's not good to lie. The Gestapo comes banging on your door and says, "Where are the fugitives? What's the right thing to do?" It's a fun little brain problem to use when you're thinking about all these different ethical theories and what you should do. Caracasus, of course, would say, if they're innocent and they're fugitives, of course you wouldn't give them up. Because why would you do that? But if you're taking yourself out of the equation and you're saying, you know, hey, I have to figure out whether it's okay for me to lie or not. And if I lie and everybody lies in the same situation, that creates a situation where nobody's going to believe anybody ever when they say anything. So therefore, it's not okay for me to lie. And it takes the specifics of the situation out of the thought process, I think, in a way that's impermissible morally. And then there's the social contract theory, which is, I think, really a good theory. It has its limits, but it basically says, okay, the right amount of liberty for all of us to have is the amount of liberty that is will enable everybody to have an equal amount of liberty. So in other words, I can't go around stomping on your feet because you don't want anyone stomping on your feet. I don't want anyone stomping on my feet. But we can all sort of, you know, we can figure out a way to live where we all have an equal amount of rights. That's those in a nutshell. So I'm going to just read a little bit more from the paper, and then tell you about how the UU theories really coincide. Okay, so Nell Noddings is a care ethicist, and she's really good. In her later work, Noddings observed that the weight and depth of need called forth obligation before any decision is made on exactly what to do. So the obligation to act, sort of arises before you figure out what the right thing to do is. The situation is something that the one caring is concerned with because her emotions, not her reason, has told her to care. The motivation for action arises from feeling. I feel I must act when I hear my baby sister cry. I feel concerned about the state of the local school system, so I must act. I feel angry that poor people in distant places are going to have their homes ruined by American values, so I must act. The necessary condition for all these feelings is a permanent state in which I am open to feeling with others, whether they are my family members, fellow community members, or total strangers. This distinction stands in sharp contrast to deontological and utilitarian moral philosophies. The emphasis is not on what specifically to do in a generalized situation. The emphasis is actually reversed. How to care for what we do in general is determined by each specific situation, not an abstract one. And I think that Americans have a big problem with knowing what to do in their own lives with regard to climate change. I think a good example is, should I drive to the store today? I know that the reason why climate change is happening is because a lot of people like me drive very short distances in their cars to the store on a regular basis. That's one of the reasons. The guy who says, but I have my rights, I should be able to do anything I want to with my car because, you know, that's my right, says you have no right to tell me what to do. Care ethics is not trying to tell anybody else what to do because they're not, rendering the ethical problem outside of an actual situation. The question is, what should I do? I live a mile away from the store. I can walk to the store pretty easily. You might live 20 miles away from the store, and if you walk to the store, it will take all day, and you'll neglect your baby, while you're walking to the store. You shouldn't walk to the store, So it's a way of sort of, saying, what should we do, or what should you do? It's saying, what should I do? And the situation that you find yourself in can be different day by day. So I think it's a real viable alternative. I'm just going to read a little bit from the 2006 Unitarian Universalist Social Justice Statement on the Threat of Global Warming and Climate Change. As Unitarian Universalists, we are called by our seventh principle to affirm and promote, quote, respect for the interdependent web of all existence, of which we are a part. We envision a world in which all people are assured of a secure and meaningful life that is ecologically responsible and sustainable, in which every form of life has intrinsic value. In other words, Unitarian Universalists are called to defer to a balance between our individual needs and those of all other organisms. That is how care ethicists think of people. They think of them as interdependent beings, not independent, rights bearers acting in a vacuum, which I think is a really wrong way, frankly, to think of people. I think you can in certain situations, but when it comes to how we act in the world, how we behave as a community, how we behave towards others, and the choices that we make on a daily basis for our lives, I think it's really important to think of the specifics of my situation, that person's situation, and not stop imagining consequences at the four walls of the room that you're in. You gotta imagine the consequences of your actions, based on what you know about how our human systems work and how we all interact with each other. Some personal practices that it says right on the UU website we should do because of this. Reduce our use of energy and our consumption of manufactured goods like the meats that become waste. Use alternative sources of energy to reduce global warming, climate change, and to encourage the development of such sources. Choose the most energy efficient transportation means that meet our needs and abilities. So again, the UU mentality is already there. And as a student of this ethical theory, it's just more and more apparent to me how the UU way of thinking really does embrace this care ethics. I think without even really knowing it, you've arrived at it through completely separate needs. So congratulations, UUs, you're already care ethicists. And I'm just going to close by reading the end of the thesis. Throughout this discussion, I've assumed that as humans, we want to do what is necessary to ensure conditions in which future human beings can live. I admit, I do not want to imagine a world where this assumption is not warranted. Going back briefly to Rawls' idea of the original position, the social contract theory, I want to emphasize that care ethicists have come to see care as a necessary condition for justice, but not a replacement for it. That said, the conception of the person in Rawls' theory of justice reflects only a part of what constitutes human selves. As Noddings observes, a self cannot be described in terms of mere rationality or choice, but neither can it be wholly described in terms of its time and culture. I'm not just a modern or postmodern self, one of a set, all of whom are shaped in general by relationships. I have been shaped by particular relationships and by my attitudes towards them. As we search for a functional ethical theory that will help us address the problem of climate change, we cannot just pick and choose what to emphasize about the nature of the person. We need to recognize that we are relational, we are rational, we are emotive, we are analytical. We identify with and are made by our family, our city, our state, our country, and hopefully by humanity. We are products of a time and place, and simultaneously, we help make this time and place what it is. In terms of our very biology, we are relational. We are the products of a billions-year evolutionary process. The very stuff that makes our flesh, blood, brain, and bone depends on the DNA and chemical reactions that were executed just so. And now, as a result, here we are. The way these chemical reactions occurred was shaped by selection pressures placed on our ancient ancestors by other species of life, by the weather patterns of the time and place long ago, and the angle of the sun, and the pull of gravity, and the fact that enough food and water was available to see all those ancestors through long enough for them to reproduce and raise up the next generation. We can appreciate all these common facets of what makes an individual and then recognize that even while each was made in the same way as all the others, each is unique. Each self has a life experience that is different from every other. And to realize this is to appreciate the true relational conditioned nature of the human being. To recognize the interrelatedness and dependent nature of all people and not respond with a resolution to do our own part to ensure that this amazing process can continue is beyond tragic. The question we must answer is this: do we want to maintain a world in which caring relations can exist? If we do, then we must recognize that we are each an individual, yes, but an individual that owes its very existence, moment by moment, to a seriously complex nest of happenstance. Not all the conditions in our nest are within our control, but some of them are. And whether or not to drive to the store constantly is one. There are many other changes we Americans could make in the ways we live that would give rise to more favorable conditions for future generations of medicine. A new paradigm must begin somewhere. Let this be one place.